Kind of to the near conclusion of this particular book. And this morning we're going to be talking and have an illustration dealing with this idea of bread, this staple of life. This may look like a shot from maybe some kind of advertisement from Panera Bread or something. But bread is an essential part of our lives and has been for mankind for a long time. And so we're going to talk about that here in a little bit as we take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Remember that our, just as a reminder, so that this is drilled in at the close of all the things that are said here in Ecclesiastes, that we remember some of these points in this particular book. But this is the story and description and discussion about our life under the sun. This is something that is the game of life, I might call it. It's constant to all men that have come before us, all that will come after us. And it's consistent with all of us that are in the room. We all are in the same boat, so to speak. We all have the same struggles, issues that are before us, and this idea that being under the sun, this term of vanity and vexation, it's the idea that not that the events and the things of our life are vain in they're not important, it's just that the reality is that they don't have anything that holds any value to us. There's nothing that we can take with the things of this life. The things of this life are transitory. It's just for the moment. We talked about this idea of labor, that it's a gift from God. Our labor is God's gift to us to strengthen us, to give us direction, okay? It's the idea also that we're to eat and to drink and be merry. We're to enjoy the things of our labor, and we're to have some fulfillment in those. But remembering that fulfillment, that those events are only things that are going to be here for a moment. We see this idea about time. Time for everything. There's a certain time for certain things. And that time and chance happen to everyone. Sometimes you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's just the way it is. This idea that generations come and go. And they're going to come. The earth's going to keep going round and round. And it's going to do it without you and I. It did it before you and I were here. And it's going to do it after that. As long as the Lord decides that this earth is here, that's the way it is. Those are truths. You can bank on it. It's 100% so. That there's things that are crooked in this world that we wish we could straighten out. You know, we may take and say the idea of sicknesses, cancers, and those kind of things are things we wish we could just not have to deal with, not have those be part of our lives. But God has put the crooked things there to keep us, you might say, humble, to keep us understanding that He's in control. He put it there for some benefit for us to seek and look for Him. So the things of this life that are seemingly crooked, when we stop and realize that it's not just because it's some bad guy out there who's doing this, and why doesn't God just fix it all? God put it there because He wants us to come to Him as the source of making things straight. But only He can make the things straight. We can't do that. There's this idea of wisdom and foolishness is looked at, neither which has any value beyond this life. It's nothing. It's transitory also. Riches, whether you're rich or poor, is also something that's not going to matter in the end. It's only for here and now. Righteousness and wickedness are things that are here on this earth that we have to deal with. Days of joy and sadness are going to be part of our existence. And there's life and death. Those who are born, and death is the final thing that all of us will face. And that we have fear of God, watch your step. Watch your step because God's in control of all of this thing. How should we conduct our lives? And then talking about this idea of better, live life pleasing to God. And so within the book, although we traditionally think of it as a very a down book, as far as, you know, there's all this vanity and vexation and there's fear and there's sadness, and all of that points to us towards God, and then, but there's a lot of places that describe what we're to do while we're here. And this particular chapter, chapter 11, does point to us to what are some things we can do while we're here that we can do in the midst of everything else that's going along. This confusion and all the rest of the world, is there some little bright spot that can be in place? Example that I've mentioned, I think, earlier in a previous class was The one time years ago when I was going to Safeway, I believe it was a Saturday, and the lines were full and there were lots of noise and craziness there. And as I was standing third or fourth person in the line, there was someone in front of me who was signing in the midst of all this confusion and chaos, clear across over to the produce room, the area where a young woman was standing there signing back to this man in the midst of all this confusion and chaos. Beautiful sight, as far as I was concerned. And so that's what our life can be as we look at, I think, chapter 11 here today. So we start off with this idea of bread. Bread is a staple. It's been a staple for mankind forever. And when we think about bread, we think about maybe if you're a cook, maybe your mother, your grandmother, your wife has cooked bread at home, and that smell of the bread being baked is a neat smell. We don't happen all the time, every day. Maybe there's some in the room that bake bread every day, but that used to be a daily chore. And so I'm sure at some point along the line, the smell of that bread, although it was nice, didn't have quite the same sentiment that it might have today. It was a chore. And you know, when Wonder Bread came out and you could get a loaf of bread that was sliced, Grandma was raising her hand saying, "That's a good deal. I'm all for that," right? Maybe great-grandma now, okay? So bread was the thing, but bread has been part of man's existence for a long time. So we see this particular verse that starts out here in 11, verse 1. It says, "Cast thy bread upon the waters." So we have to understand or think about this idea of bread and water, and we see about casting. And you know, about the only picture that I could see, if this was a very literal thing, was something like this. This was my existence, or my thought, that came to mind when I first read this verse, "Cast your bread upon the waters." And that was going to the duck pond, and go to the duck pond to feed the ducks. And I don't know what you used to take, but we used to take bread. And if Mom was, we were going to the duck pond, she knew we were going, she always dug down into the bottom of the bread bin, Wonder Bread or whatever it was, not to offend anybody who likes Wonder Bread white, but she would grab that, especially the older, staler pieces, right, or maybe some hot dog buns that were old, and that's what we would take to feed the ducks. But I don't think that's really what this verse is talking about. And when I think about throwing that bread upon the water, it didn't last very long because the ducks would all be my friends for a while as long as I had bread. I'm sure you experienced the same thing, possibly. As soon as you ran out of bread, they were gone, right? And I couldn't go back there, as it says here, "And thou shalt find it after many days." After many days, I wasn't going to find any bread that was still floating in that pond with that duck. So what could this mean? What could this describe? So let's think about this idea of our life under the sun. We have all these situations in our life that are somewhat difficult, and we have the things or the substance to us that are important to us. And what could those be? Well, they could be time, and they could be money. They could be helpfulness, or whatever you want to call it. Those are the things that are the most valuable to us that we might have. And this verse is what we're trying to describe, is that we're going to take this thing that we have and we're going to put it into a place and we're going to use it in a time when maybe it doesn't seem like the best time to use it. Now, doing some reading on this general topic about grain and bread, some have suggested that this verse gives an allusion to the fact of when you would actually sow the grain or the seed to grow wheat, okay? Grain. And it may be that it says this idea of cast thy bread or this seed upon the waters. So maybe you were going out there and you wanted to plant the seed, but the field was really wet. Maybe it was floating in water. Some have suggested that the Egyptians, when they would plant their seed for their crop, on occasions it would be flooded, and so they would go out in boats and they would throw their grain into the water. They would cast their seed into the water, and that seed would fall through the water and set on the ground, and then when it would drain out, it would be ready, already in, pr- impregnated into the ground. So that could be the case. But we see that we have these things that we have, this thing of value that we're going to cast out there in a time when maybe it doesn't seem very successful that it's going to be used or have much profit, or we're going to question whether we should get rid of it or to expend it. So be thinking about what those things might be in our lives that we would want to not expend, not to send forth in some way. So we may say, I'm going to do a good deed. Maybe we may say this idea of passing it on, you know. We were driving up Mount Hood one day, and we were there at whatever that ski place is, and we stopped, and this guy is overheated, and he needs some antifreeze. And for some reason, I don't know, it was one of those times I never take an extra gallon of antifreeze with me, okay? And for some reason, I had one, and I gave it to him. He said, well, how much can I pay you? I said, just sometime when somebody else needs some help, help them. There you go. You might call passing it on, right? Now, that was a big, it wasn't a big deal, right? But I don't know that that ever going to happen. You know, how does that come back to me? Well, and I didn't do it so that I get something back to me. But the idea here in this verse is that if you have something, don't be holding on to it so that you can use it for some later date when somebody else needs some help. So this general idea is that you will find it many days later. So you've expended something that you needed. So we'll see this as we go through this next couple of verses. I think we'll play out here how we see. So he says, give it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's something that's coming out and getting back. Okay, right. You're going to expect something back, or something's going to come back in your efforts that you put forth. So here he says, give a portion to seven. Now seven is a number that's used as a perfect number. We see that in the gospel. It would be a perfect number, something that's complete. So this idea is give a portion to seven. So make it a complete giving, something that you would pass on in a complete way. So you wouldn't hold something back, maybe either in volume, okay, or in necessity. So somebody has maybe a need for 10 of a thing, and you have 12, but, you know, if I give you 10, I'm only going to have 2, right? Well, the idea is give them the 10, right? And even to make an example of this here, also to 8. So you think 7's a perfect number. That's the number that will satisfy whatever the need is. The point here is then give 8. Now, in all the things that we've seen here in the book of Ecclesiastes, we see this struggle and this anxiety that's on this earth with regards to life as general, that, you know, there's nothing, nothing seems to be in order, things seem to be out of order. There's a lot of, almost you get a sense of fear that's part of some of the things about life. But here he's saying, don't worry about that. Go ahead and give beyond what, or to a more perfect number. For thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So someone needs 10 and you give them 10 and everything in your life's destroyed anyway, let's say it the next day. Let's say you die the next day. Well, you didn't need the 2 anyway, did you? Right? You don't know what's coming. Maybe tomorrow your ship's going to come in, as Steve said. Your grain that you sent out a couple years ago comes back as ships full of grain, and you have an overabundance. You just don't know. So for today, meet the need. You don't know what's going to happen here upon this earth. So if the clouds are be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. We can all raise our hand and say, that is a true statement. You know, if it's going to rain, and the clouds are full, and they're full and they rain on the earth, it's going to happen. I don't see any weathermen on any of the weather reports say, well, we're expecting rain at 2 o'clock, but we've decided we're not going to let that happen, and so we've stopped it till 4. I never hear them say that. if they do predict that it's coming at the right time, or what, the clouds are going to come, and there's nothing that you can do to stop it. So that's our condition here on this earth. You can't stop the rain. It's upon us. And if a tree shall fall toward the south or toward the north in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. That's true. It's going to fall. And there's nothing you can really do about it. I mean, you could have a big piece of equipment and you can control where that thing maybe lands, but if that tree is falling by itself, you just get out of the way. Even anybody experienced in the lumber industry, out in the woods, when that tree starts to go, it doesn't matter what your machine you might have, you're not going to stop it. It's coming. It's going to go where it goes. And so you're really not in a position to be able to control the things of this life. And so back to the previous couple verses, then why are you holding back in what you may be able to do or provide in some way? Towards that end there in verse 4, he that observeth the wind shall not sow. Well, on the outside of that, you say, well, that somewhat makes sense. If I'm going to be sowing grain and I'm going to have 80-mile-an-hour winds, maybe I don't want to do that today because I don't want all my seed to be over here in the road. But the idea that is trying to be described here is that it's more of towards the holding back that's the observing of the wind. So towards the first verse about casting your bread upon the waters is saying, well, you know, I really need to hold back on this a little bit because, you know, there may be some wind coming. So there's going to be some days coming down the road that I've got to really prepare for. And so maybe we have a conflict with that that says, well, you know, we should be good stewards and we should be prepared for the future. Well, that may be so, but here it's to the matter of I'm not going to accomplish or to do some things that I should be doing, whatever they may be, the things that are correct and right, because of some future date that I can't know for sure. I don't know how strong the winds are going to be, really, but I'm going to hold back. I'm not going to provide what and do the things I should do. And he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. So the same idea here of reaping the fields because, well, it looks like it's going to rain. I better not do what needs to be done because it could rain today. I see some clouds. And so we're holding back from the things that we should do. And what he's saying is that on this earth, in this life that we have, we shouldn't be doing that. There's things we can be doing to lessen the load, potentially, of someone else. Or to do something that's right. Or to do something that's righteous. Something that is important to be done, we shouldn't be holding back for some other time and place. As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit. We don't know what's going to happen to us in our spirit, our breath, our life. We can't control that. We're here right now. In an hour, we could all be gone. Right? We just don't know. Nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child. We don't know all the complexities. I'm sure there's some doctor somewhere who's come up with some answer for all how that exactly happens. But the reality is that even with the guessing, you still don't know. We know what happens, but do we know all that goes on to make that happen? We don't know that. Even so, thou knowest not the works of God who maketh it all. You don't know how God works. I don't know how God works. I don't understand it because sometimes from my perspective, it doesn't make sense. And sometimes from your perspective, I'm sure it doesn't make sense too. We just don't know how he works. We see things, but we don't understand why. And that's a big question, isn't it? Why do certain things happen? Why are certain things in place? And so to the previous verse, casting your bread, but don't worry about tomorrow, basically, is what it comes down to. You have today to live. and the things that are needed for today are the things that you should be concentrating on. Because the rest is all what? Vanity, right? It's not going to hold anything. So it says, in the morning sow thy seed. So when it's morning time, you do the things that are needed for the morning time. You sow your seed. You get up and you sow. You do what you need to do. You accomplish that task. And in the evening, withhold not thy hand. So I've gained so much for today, maybe. I've accomplished something for today. And let's just say back to verse 1, there's this need. Well, I've accomplished 10 and somebody needs 8. And, oh, there's tomorrow, I might need 10. And it's not necessarily for food or money. It could be anything within life that's needed or necessary for accomplishing right now. That's good and right. Don't hold back on that. Don't think that there's a tomorrow. For thou knowest not whether thou shalt prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. You just don't know. You cannot predict what's going to happen with the events of today. How are you going to deal with today and present and provide the things that need to be provided? It says, truly the light is sweet. How many enjoyed today when you came up and the sun was out and it was a nice spring day? How many said it was a nice spring day? A lot of people probably, right? Sun was out. So we enjoyed that aspect of today and the light that's out. And a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. So we, just in a very simple event of life, had the fact that the sun was out today and we got to see it. We should have joy in that simple fact, that the sun is out and we got to see it. Okay? With all the other things that are going on in everybody's life, that was a sweet moment. It still is. Sun's still out, right? But then we have this word of contrast. So now we had a sweet moment, but the author then brings us back to some reality. Okay? But here's what the deal is, folks. If a man lived many years, many of us in this room have seen a lot of sunrises. We've seen a lot of the sun and rejoiced in all of them, them all. Yet let him do what? Remember the days of darkness. Okay? So we're brought back to reality that within this life there are days of darkness. And they're to be remembered too. For there shall be many, and all that cometh is vanity. So the things of today, even though with the sunrise, the things of today are not something that we can take with us. They're not something that are going to give us something we can hold on to. So this idea then of vanity. It says, now rejoice, O young man. I remember my grandmother said that, you know, even when she was in her 90s, she still felt like she was 18 inside, right? So all of us here, I don't want us to suggest, I'm going to pick on somebody here, Aaron. I'm going to pick on Aaron, okay? Aaron's young, right? She's, how old are you, Aaron? 21. She's 21. And all of us in the, who are older than 21 probably remember being 21, right? We think about that. And even Wilda over here, I see her smiling when I said, remembering 21. Okay? She remembers 21. So we are all in some ways still young. In some ways. So he says, you can rejoice in that time of your youth and let your heart cheer thee in the days of yours. So when you are in your youth, you need to really be happy because you're in your youth. But we can all smile about maybe our youth and walk in the ways of thy heart. So you have opportunities when you're young to do things that we can't do necessarily when we're older. Even if we wanted to, we maybe can't do those things anymore. And in the sight of thy eyes. So the things that you see, the things that you're involved with as you're young, you can rejoice in those things. You have those things that are yours. But know thou that all the things, all these things God will bring thee into judgment. So we talk about the book of Ecclesiastes, we maybe think it's for an old man's book or an old person's book. But really this is a lesson for young people too, right? This is the reality of this world is that we're all going to die and we're all going to meet in judgment towards God. That's the lesson we teach our children. This is the reality. This is how life is. This is how it plays out. You can rejoice in being young and you can do the things you can do. Just be mindful that those things are things you're going to be called into account for, just like we all are. So, therefore, we're called to do something. It says, remove sorrow from thy heart. Well, this world is full of sorrow. There's a lot of sorrow in this heart. This is a hard thing maybe to do. And put away evil from thy flesh. That may be difficult for some to do, but this is what we're called to do. For childhood and youth are vanity. So as a child, as a young person, remembering that the things of this world, the joy that you may have in this life, is going to be relatively short. And you're going to be called to make an answer to those things that you're involved with and your things you're doing. So the call then to those who are young, those who are old, is to live a life that is pleasing to God because we know we will be called into account for that. So a relatively short chapter here in chapter 11 as we come to the conclusion in chapter 12 for next week. We have some time for some observations either in this chapter or in anything in the book of Ecclesiastes. And so we'll open up the floor to observations. Any thoughts? Quiet, yes. Okay. Okay. Just to summarize, if you didn't hear all that, the idea of not spending a lot of time mourning over things of this life, because that takes away from our time, our moment that we have now, that we can be doing more positive things in our lives than dwelling on necessarily the past.
You're going to meet the same ruler and you still can't take anything with it. It doesn't matter who you had the before life. You meet the same person, you have the same judgment, no matter who you are.
Okay. All right. Good. Barry?
Well, the preacher here is admonishing us. That's why he tells us to throw our bread on the water. He is encouraging us, whether it's the providence of God involved in this, which we can't control. He then separates that and says, push forward in life. There's things that are going to happen in this life. And you have a portion, as the second verse says. You have a portion in this life. Whatever that portion is, utilize that portion to your best ability. And along this way, calamity is going to happen. You're going to run into trouble. And how are you going to handle that? He says, well, don't worry about it. Don't be a worrywart. It goes around calculating everything, and I can't do it today, or I can't do it tomorrow. Don't be a pessimist. He says, use your portion. And of course, you get down to the sowing of the seed and the wind. And if you don't sow, guess what? There's no reaping.
Yep.
It just can't happen. It's just a normal fact that you either sow seed and then the grain comes up and you reap the grain. But if you never sow because you're over here being a worrywart or pessimist, looking at life, I don't know if I can do that. Well, it's just not the day to talk. It's, you come up with all these reasons why you shouldn't do something. And what the writer here is doing is telling us, don't worry about that. Take a portion, live life, help others, and be righteous in God's sight.
Okay, good. From the perspective of Solomon being the king who had all the things that he had, all the things that he possessed, him casting his bread upon the water seems kind of, really? I mean, who's going to give him something, right? But we did see, if we could take a look at the Queen of Sheba coming with all the gifts that she had, just in the wisdom that he had possessed. You can see some example there. Yeah, but don't be a pessimist towards this life. And we can easily do that based upon this idea of remembering if we use vanity as putting us in a pessimistic mode. All right, other thoughts? Steve?
Maybe verses 3 through 6 or whatever, where he's saying, try and control everything. And really, you have one guy who's saying, maybe he's superstitious. Well, if I sow my seed in the morning, that's the seed that grows good. The seed at night kind of doesn't do anything. And maybe you have one person who thinks, as long as I eat only vegetables, supplements or whatever it is, and I'll never get cancer, or I'll never have any bad things happen. And another person says, well, if it happens, it happens. And what he's saying is, you have control over taking action, but you don't have control over outcomes. And so you need to take action when you have the opportunity. And I just think that's a good reminder. Sometimes we need to give our own abilities, maybe our ability to worry and foresee everything, or our ability to do a bunch of stuff and be proactive, and we credit that with our success, when really it's not about that. It's about sometimes it's out of our control. We can just do our part. So I just kind of like that concept in there.
Okay. Our part of our doing. We can be doing. We can be doers. Right? Okay. All right. Other thoughts? Yeah, we don't know our
that we see, feel,
we don't know the outcomes, right?
Cast it out, if we share it, then
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think from a point of the actual book of Ecclesiastes, I think the imagery is very physical to this world, but I think you can take in general concept the idea of what you sow in a spiritual sense is going to have some reward for others and for yourself in the end. So I think you can take it to that point, but I think from this particular book, we're specifically looking at the physical things that are there. But definitely can take a look at the concept from that. Okay? Some other thoughts? All right, well, I'm going to pose here just the last minute we have of our class to ask this particular question for you to consider for next week as we come to the conclusion of this particular book, chapter 12. And we all know the conclusion, or at least I'm sure most of us do, the conclusion that the author, Solomon, comes to. But I want to ask you, in all this area of wisdom that we've seen in the book of Ecclesiastes, to really concentrate or think about and meditate upon, this wisdom is not coming from Solomon. That this wisdom is coming through Solomon from God. And that the topics in this book, although, as I just mentioned, are primarily looking at it, our life under the sun, here on this earth, that God has given us some really clear instruction towards how we conduct ourselves here on this earth and how, what kind of attitude we should have. The reason why I want you to think about that aspect of that these words are coming from God is that on some occasions we may look at this book and say, well, and I've heard this comment before and I've even thought it myself, that, you know, Solomon kind of really messed up towards the end of his life, and I'm just not really sure that, you know, Solomon had his act together good enough for me to take this message at heart. And so that can, in some way, diminish what we read in Ecclesiastes and what we read towards the end of this chapter 12. So let's, I want you to consider that a little bit this week, is how do I deal with that when I look at the man's life versus what he wrote, coming from God who inspired him to write that, if there's a conflict there in your mind? Because the conclusion of this matter could be affected by how you think about that, or in some ways how you look at the book as a whole. So anyway, give that some thought, and we'll take a look then at chapter 12. Next week. So I appreciate any other closing thoughts or comments. All right. Thank you very much for your time this morning.